Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books, the movies they love, and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, yeah. Episode 352. And we are going to talk about a book written by friend of the pod, Cy Kellett, who was a guest, what was it, about a year and a half ago? Yeah, but we sure enjoy him. He's a host on Catholic Answers, which is a terrific podcast or radio show, wherever you get to listen to it. But highly recommend it if you haven't heard it. But he wrote a novella, a science fiction novella, called Ad Limina. And we have both read it before, and I just wanted to talk about it because I do enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, me too. And it's the only novel that he's written, as far as I know.
As far as I know, the only fiction that he's published. Yeah.
But it's the kind of book, I think reading this is when I realized that I had enjoyed books like this before, this kind of through no plan of your own necessarily. You're dragged through all these different kinds of societies and situations. And so it's kind of like Gulliver's Travels. Not exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah.
But, you know, that was written for political reasons. And my favorite of those is what I consider Heinlein's best book, which is Citizen of the Galaxy.
Ooh, great.
Yeah. And this forcibly put me in mind of Citizen of the Galaxy every time I've read it.
Oh,
because
cool.
We all know, well, it's Jonathan Swift too, but Robert Heinlein was not necessarily always subtle, but he was definitely making a point, and it was always interesting.
Yes.
And he would take moments to kind of stop and explain things to you. Here I'm really thinking of Starship Troopers, if anybody's read that. It's like, oh,
yeah,
yes, yeah. Those classes. This isn't really hitting stuff with a hammer necessarily, but because it's about a bishop on Mars who has to make his ad limina visit to the Pope in Rome and inadvertently winds up on a ship that's hijacked. So he's dragged through all these different societies that are in outer space before he can get to Earth. We're seeing all the ways that Cy Kellett is imagining different trends in our society will develop. And how does that look against the lens of Catholic faith? Because this is a very faithful bishop.
Yeah.
So I really, really like it.
That's great. Yeah. And I did too. Yeah. An ad limina visit is something bishops do, right? Every 5 years. He put canon law right at the beginning. Every 5 years, a diocesan bishop is to go to Rome to venerate the tombs of the blessed apostles, Peter and Paul, and to present himself to the Roman pontiff every 5 years. And then the, I don't know if it's a different page, I have the Kindle version, but then he has Code of Canon Law promulgated 2098.
Yeah.
In cases of travel hardship, a bishop of a diocese outside the orbit of Earth's moon may delay with the permission of the Holy See otherwise required visits to the tombs of the blessed apostles. Yeah. It's neat, you know, and I love, we've talked about The Star by Arthur C. Clarke on here before, and, you know, I've mentioned that that's just one of my favorite short stories, and one of the things that I love about it is the Catholic Church is alive and well in the future, right? Which is something that I encounter so very often. When you look for it, it's there, and there's a lot of stuff, so but this is a terrific book. So this bishop that's on Mars has never been to Earth. So he was born and raised on Mars. And so, you know, the Martian colonies and cities have existed for that long. And there are colonies on asteroids and colonies on Mars or cities on Mars and space stations and and it's cool. So one of the interesting things we notice right away is how difficult it is for him to book travel. And here's like the first projection of societal evolution, I guess, that Cy Kellett kind of points out, is that the Catholic Church is a discriminating organization. I think that's how it was put.
Hateful.
Yeah, yeah. So we're not allowed to fly on regular ships. We have to take, I guess you'd call them back channels, or I can't remember. I'm sorry I didn't look it up right before, but it was like there are these modes of travel that are commonly used, and we just don't get to use them because of we've been declared a group that isn't allowed to.
Yeah, we're a hate group.
Yeah, exactly.
So they basically don't want those traveling with the nice, normal people.
Right.
Because, you know, our opinions don't go along with regular society. And that goes along for, I mean, he meets a Mormon family, of course.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool touch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, he ends up, I mean, the way he ends up doing it is they end up getting on sort of a cruise liner that is run by an independent. Right. So, so he gets to hop on there, and this Mormon family is also on the same ship. So sorry to interrupt, but I just thought that was fun to say. So,
yeah, because it shows him traveling on Mars. It's not so important because they're all kind of just in it together, but he's kind of going by what would have been the equivalent these in like in the olden days for us of, you know, first he's on like a mule drawn wagon. Then as he's getting closer to civilization, then it's more of a truck. Then it, like this 4-story tall truck that's got beds, little cubicles with beds in them.
Mm.
I just thought that was great.
And then
it's, he looks around a couple of the towns as he's going, because everything's underground, so that all gets described. And but as he goes, when they get closer to a real town that is the size where an actual spaceship can dock there, that's when he's having to deal with, you know, oh, I have to be on this second-class liner because it's independent.
Yeah,
and the different kinds of people he meets, like one is had done papers.
Uh-huh.
Was that? He's an educator,
right?
A teacher, and he had done papers and stuff, so he didn't mind talking to Catholics because he'd studied religion.
I mean,
he's a perfectly nice guy. He'd studied religion, so he knew that they were perfectly nice people, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was great. And so that's the tone of this book, is this bishop now is getting on this ship from Mars, and he's leaving his diocese and is trying to fly to Earth to do this ad limina visit, you know, so the Pope is eager to see him. And so that's what it's about. And there, it's not a straight line. That's what, you know, so like you said, he encounters all kinds of things on the way. So, but that's really the structure of it. And it's a novella. It's fairly short. So we do need to step over the spoiler line. So if you're interested in reading this without that, this is your time to jump off and do so. A lot of interesting things in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, first of all, just having a bishop on Mars is, you know, it's coming someday, right? Well, but it's interesting, you know, to think about that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The whole planet is his diocese, right?
Right, right.
There are not a lot of Catholics.
And there's not a lot of people yet, right? But it's like, you know, there are plenty of people, but it's not like Earth in any way. But that's just, this whole planet. And, it's fascinating to think, you know, being a science fiction fan and loving the stories of colonization and flying to other planets and doing all this stuff. You wonder, you know, okay, what's the church going to do when this happens? You know, how is a person going to be connected? How's a bishop going to be connected to, the Pope and all this kind of stuff? Cause it's fascinating to think about. And the thing is, you know, our religion works just great. You know what I mean?
Right.
This is not some challenge to our faith in any way, you know, as we move forward into space and stuff. And I started to think of what's happened in real life, you know, like, I think it was Buzz Aldrin who brought communion with him. I don't think he was Catholic. I think he was Anglican or Episcopal,
something,
but he brought his communion with him. Remembering Genesis being read as the first spaceship went around the backside of the moon. Really fast, really great stuff.
Well, and we began as a missionary religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus says the last command is go tell the good news to everyone. So the apostles are all going not only in lands they know, but lands they don't, everywhere they can, because this is the most amazing thing ever. They want everyone to know, and they've been told to do it. So going out to Mars or the moon or all these various places that we see in this book, it is a natural built-in part of our faith. And the thing I loved was how Cy showed the ways that these were, well, these different places he went, none of them really had the Catholic faith there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fascist planet and the new progressive science planet and all that stuff. But they were all curious for one reason or another. He would get talked to about this, and he would have to kind of, he was kind of diffident. He knew where he stood, but he didn't want to be real pushy.
Yeah.
But he was forced to be pushy and take a stand and say, well, but the faith would say this. And I liked the fact that all these different things, they stood up against the faith. I mean, the faith stood up against them.
Right.
The faith always had a way to look at it, because it was always about the dignity of the human being. And wherever you go in any circumstances, that's the same thing to consider no matter what.
Right, yeah.
So I enjoyed seeing that kind of tested.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, you know, the communication between the Pope and him.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he'd send a note to the Vatican saying, this is what happened, this is where I'm at, I'm still on my way.
At
one point he was like, yeah, can I go back to Mars from here now? Because he was hijacked. The Starliner that they were taking to Earth or the moon, it was initially very early in the novella, it was hijacked and taken elsewhere to Ceres, which is in the asteroid belt. It's like a dwarf planet in the asteroid belt. So, but on this planet were fascists, and there's a Führer and everything, and you know, they were making what they thought was going to be the greatest human existence, you know. They had this all figured out.
Superman.
Yeah. And it was interesting as they approached, they didn't know why or who did this, you know, and then they were cruising towards Ceres, and as they were on approach, they said, we know that you have a bishop on board, and he's the first one we want to meet. And I thought that was interesting, right? So he gets off and meets, goes to the Führer himself. You know, they take him straight to the man in charge. Mm-hmm. And, the guy wants to talk to him. So, and then there was communication right after that with the Pope, you know, where he reported to the Pope, he said, or the Vatican, he didn't know who he was talking to. So he just sends the Vatican, hey, I've got, this is where I'm at, you know, and the Vatican sends back, you know, give regards and, but they also tell him, you know, to
preach the good news,
right? And even when it was uncomfortable for him, so he's like, really? So I need to do this. Okay, so.
Like, I don't even have a reason to do it. Yeah. Who am I supposed to talk to?
Yeah, who exactly, yeah. So he does it, though, and it's great, yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah, there was one point in the book where he was thinking, you know, all these places he'd been were completely out of his control, but that didn't mean it was accidental.
Yes.
And as it went along and different little things would happen, you'd go, wow, who would have thought this? Who would have thought that? And it's not that they're miracles, but after he gets that note from the Vatican about, you know, well, go preach the good news to whoever you can, and he gets a request to go speak to the leaders of the planet.
Right.
And he's like, oh no, I didn't, not this.
Yeah.
But he did it.
Yep.
And at the end, he was just kind of overcome by the Spirit, it sounded like. And it was something that exactly one person really needed to hear.
Yeah.
And they probably all needed to hear it, but she was ready to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know how that would have maybe acted on people later either.
Yeah, yeah. You know, looking back on the book, I can't remember if it was here or if it was elsewhere where he started to talk. No, you know what? This was in the planet where they were doing the post-human stuff.
Oh, I thought that was the planet I was thinking of.
Okay, maybe. But there was a fascist one. That is
the
one
where he goes and gives the talk.
Yes, and he goes
and... Not the fascist one, is the new progressive one. Yeah,
so the new progressive one is where he's there and a woman stormed out. Mm-hmm. And he thought, okay, well, she's offended, you know.
Yeah.
And it turns out the opposite was true. She was realizing what he said was true and was realizing that she was participating in something that was heinous. And... it was just well done, really well done mm-hmm. by Cy Kellett. And I mean, he deals with like these fascists who believe, hey, we're just going to correct the errors of the original fascism and this is going to be great for humanity and we're going to force this on everybody. And then from there, he ends up at this place where they're doing experimentation on human beings and they're making
really awful stuff.
Yeah, it was really something. It was like something out of Dr. Moreau, right? Where they're, you know, where the island of Dr. Moreau, where they're just like attaching pieces and taking brains and moving them and all this stuff.
Poor Doug.
And then, yeah, and there was, it was, Doug was just so great. Doug was one of these post-humans. Barely recognizable as ever having been human and met the bishop and started to discuss with the bishop religion. And he was like, you know, do I have a soul and all this stuff? And anyway, they got to a point where he's going to be baptized. Now he requests baptism. So
mm-hmm.
he has to ask the Vatican. He says, you know, yeah, I'm going to baptize you. Right. Because yeah. for him, he's like, for sure, this is right.
Right.
And
this is a human being.
Yeah, this is a human being. And so he sends a thing. And again, he's not sure who he's talking to. Someone at the Vatican. And the response is, you know, to move forward with that. But then it also...
We welcome our new brother.
Right. Yeah. And then it also came with that directive. Hey, but you need to do some missionary work while you're there, by the way.
Yeah, that's it. Well, you know? The thing with... And the thing with Doug and that whole planet that was interesting was this was written in 2013.
Hmm.
So, and I'm trying to remember when transgenderism was being brought up for the first time. And I remember I didn't even understand what anybody was talking about.
Yeah.
At the time.
And well, I understood. There's still some things I don't understand, but I do understand transgenderism, right? As in a woman right. that wants to be a man or a man that wants to be a woman. The stuff I don't get is... the other genders. I don't know what that means.
Well, and I don't, this was just the idea of having sex change operations. Cause you really feel like you're the other sex. And I was like, what? I mean, I really hadn't heard anything like this. And it was so unusual that I wasn't the only one who went, I don't understand what this concept is, you know,
mm-hmm.
but now of course it's just been grasped by people and thrown into our society headlong. And it made me, in that sense, it made me think of this planet. And I was thinking, this is surely before that was really very much in the public eye. But the thing is that the things that Cy Kellett was talking about in this book are just like taking natural extensions of all that stuff. So poor Doug, he's a... Do you say bonobo? Is that how you say that kind of ape? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but when he was a baby, his brain was transplanted into a baby bonobo. So he's never been a human.
Mm.
I mean, a human body or anything.
Right. Yeah.
And it's he wasn't sure. Am I human? Am I not human? Am I? And other people would yes or no. So he was having to puzzle a lot of this out on his own. And then at one point when they're up in the dome kind of floating around or whatever, they see that thing that it looks like a big insect or something that's translucent.
Yeah, and it's outside.
And it can
fold
itself up. And it's made so mm-hmm. that it can take radiation and everything and work on stuff. But it's kind of also decorative sounding. And that's when Doug said, oh, that was a human being.
Hmm.
but they worked on it like this. And I was like,
ugh. Yeah.
You know, that's just pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I just felt like it was really nicely imaginative of the horrific things people will do, thinking they're just experimenting, thinking they're being kind.
Yeah.
Like when the scientist says to Doug, we really don't think you should leave. No one can take care of you and you're sick and all this stuff. And he's like, I don't need you to take care of me. And he's like, oh, you do, you do. And then, so they say, your new friends are telling you lies, basically. And let's discuss it then, Doug said. I did not want to, but let's discuss my safety. When did you develop this tender concern for my safety? Eddie was surprised at the harsh tone of Doug's voice, and apparently so was Dr. Cantor, who seemed entirely taken aback. We have always kept you safe, Doug. Why would you say such a thing? You are a valuable part of this community. This seemed to hit Doug hard. For a moment, he appeared dumbfounded. He shook his head, a look of pain on his face, as he stared wide-eyed at Dr. Cantor. But there was no one to keep me safe from you, he said. His voice cracked as he said it, and tears began to flow. If someone has hurt you, I'm sorry. Truly, I am sorry, but we did our very best to keep you safe. Doug could not contain himself anymore. He rose up and shouted in the face of the kindly doctor. And where are my arms and legs? Where is my face? What did you do with it? You threw it away. Doug, I have never seen my own face, Doug yelled. You stole everything from me. And he sits down and starts crying. And the doctor's just like, well, it sounds like you're really depressed. And I'm so sorry that you're taking it like this, you know. And I'm just like, oh, man. Yeah. And he said, you threw my face away. I just...
Oh, boy.
My heart broke.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and then his conversation with the bishop is one that I have highlighted. He says, this is Doug. He says, I have thought of myself as a human. But since I have been thinking about God, I've felt unsure about whether I was human in a religious way. Does that make sense? Yes, the bishop said, patting Doug's shoulder. What doesn't make sense is what was done to you. It certainly makes sense that it would raise every kind of question. Do you agree with Eddie? Am I a child of God? Doug asked, and his voice cracked as the words came out. Yes, Doug, I do. It is clear what you are. Yes. And right answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah. Yeah. And these are ethical dilemmas, right? Well done, you know, I mean, it's not a dilemma on our side. It feels like, you know, everybody should know that that's wrong. And, but yet, people don't, it's like, you know, we're advancing science or something. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Well, you look at some of the decisions that are made on the behalf of children, like even things like in England where there was a really, you know, sick kid and they wouldn't let the parents take it out of the hospital to have at home or to take to Italy.
Yeah.
And the Vatican's like, we will pay for the airfare. We'll pay for the hospitalization. But they wouldn't do it because they're like, no, it's in this kid's best interest to die. The quality of life is terrible for him.
Oh, boy. Yep.
You know, this kind of thing.
And then the abortion of Down syndrome to cure Down syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, and this is why I brought up the transgender thing, very young children whose parents are, in my opinion, misinterpreting things in a child that young and then starting them down a path from which there's no return, which will physically change them. And, you know, these are things that are being done that just are not right.
Incredibly
and
difficult.
They may be with the people who are doing it are so mistaken. You know, they're trying to act for the best, but they don't know what the best is. You know?
Right. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
And that's all the stuff that
we're, and it's just a terrific, Sai has shown us this, and it's just terrific, you know, to do this in a science fiction. I mean, it's just so well done. And then he even goes into now the flight from there to the moon. Now we're dealing with virtual worlds and things, you know. Yes. So he's even touching on that. and how the bishop reacted to it. So the bishop has suffered from depression himself and was seeking some assistance, you know, especially after how depressing the Doug situation was.
Yeah.
But he needed a little bit of assistance. And but anyway, he ends up through a couple things, but he ends up participating in some virtual things and feeling how unreal it was, but yet addictive it was. You know, it said on some level that seemed to be below his emotions, this loss of contact with himself was uncomfortable. This is not right, he thought on several occasions, but though he could know it was not right, he could not feel it. And without feeling, much of the motivation for corrective action was missing. So he just kind of fell into that for days. But then he pulled out of it, you know, even though he felt good, because he described feeling better and sleeping and then waking up and feeling good. It was like, but he still knew, no, this isn't right. And
Because the drug that, or the nanites or whatever it was that he was taking, were enhancing everything about regular life.
Mm.
So he's like, oh, this ship that had seemed so disorganized and kind of strange, it all made sense now. You know?
Yeah.
So he's glorying in it. And he's got no normal people around him to try and help him.
Yeah.
Everybody's like that.
Right. And this is like the natural outworking of like Instagram, let's say, which I have fallen into for lengths of time where you know, you scroll through Instagram and seeing everybody's best lives.
Oh, and, yeah, you know what I mean?
It's two hours later suddenly, and then you're but most of what you see on there is not even true. And it's giving you an unrealistic reality. So it's virtual reality, but it's not real. And you know, the bishop would meet somebody who's, you know, says, oh, I've just spent 4 days in the virtual world and it was awesome.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, is that good for you? You know? So, yeah. So again, you know, psychedelic, just dipping in this as this traveling goes on, just like, here's a little bit of this, here's a little bit of that, you know, and this bishop is experiencing all these things. And then, so back on the fascist world, he was given some chocolates, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that was, and he was like, the person who gave him the chocolate said, don't eat this till you get to Earth. And he was like, is this poison?
Yeah.
And he still carried it with him.
Stupid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, then he ends up on the moon and then the Earth. Because, you know, from the moon to the Earth is just like a bus ride, is how he described it, you know, 9 hours. And gets on the planet, and he is just amazed. I loved those descriptions.
Me too.
How amazing the Earth is to someone who's never been here. And that, again, is what science fiction can do. It's like, we live in this amazing place, and we all just take it for granted. And he said that as he walked around. Nobody was looking at the sky, but look at the sky, you know.
Yeah, and, it's changing all the time.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And, I mean, boy, don't we have that, all of us that are living in an amazing, unique place. And yet it's just taken for granted. So it's
funny because one of the things, I'm sure I've mentioned this at some point, but one of the things that really helped me to kind of see the Earth differently that way was a friend of mine who loves science fiction. And she was saying, you know, what I don't understand is everybody always wants to create these virtual worlds where they're living in a science fiction environment. And she goes, but we're in a science fiction environment. Basically, she goes, the sky is always changing. You know, we've got the smells, we've got the feels, we've got everything. When you look at all the extremes of the Earth, it's all there just laid out before us.
Mm.
And the way he wrote about this reminded me of that conversation. Because
I was thinking,
this is all designed to be the same, but always different, always entertaining.
That's something,
But I loved the thing where he said, really the birds were freaking them out, man.
Birds like, everywhere.
They're wild, they can be dangerous, and they're just all over the place. No one pays any attention to them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they'll move when I walk over past them. I mean, and they just land in front of me, and then he said, the squirrels, they're surely going to jump on me. And then even the plants, which I found interesting, it says, that bothered him almost as much as everything else. It says, the plants were relentless and seemed to fit themselves into any available spot. Grass emerged from sidewalks and between bricks. Thin trees worked their way up through any odd spot of soil. Weeds, flowers, vines, and mosses took over even when there was no soil. And then the air was full of the smell of them. And I was just like, yeah, this, it really shows you how unique the world is.
Oh, yeah. It's beautifully done.
It's too bad he's freaked out, but you know.
Yeah, and you know, him being just outside without a roof over his head is you know, it's not comfortable.
And he'd always been in an enclosure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, very cool. Mm-hmm. Just great, just great. And then, you know, you've got this little intrigue going on all at the same time.
Right,
he's got fascists, you know, threatening war against the rest of the system, and him meeting the Pope, and I thought that was cool, you know. So it got to the Pope, and the Pope greeted him, end of chapter, you know, and then it moved on, and I was like, what happened? But then he gave it to us later, you know. He said, what did you guys talk about anyway? Somebody asked him, and he was like, oh, he wanted to know all about Mars, he wanted to know all about Ceres, he wanted to know all about what was going on out there. And then he, you know, said, let's get missions to these wild places, you know, he called them. And just terrific. Very satisfying, I thought. Yep.
And definitely.
Yeah, and then this intrigue where, you know, he's packing these chocolates around on the earth. They're meant for him and the Pope, and he knows he's not eating them, you know. But yet, you know, when he opens them, in the atmosphere of the earth, they kind of have exploded in the bag.
Exploded, yeah. Yeah,
and but then it these little nanites or whatever was inside him gave him a number, this very long number,
mm-hmm. And metal strips or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. And it turned out to be some crucial information about the location of a base. You know, the rebel base.
It is.
Help me, Obi-Wan. Well,
and it puts him into an interesting situation, because there's an Earth, like a military space force inspector, mm-hmm. who's trying to get him to give her the information, because they want to take their fleet and attack this fascist base.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, he's thinking, I don't know if I want you to do that. I think maybe this should all be torn up and built again.
Right,
and he's like, I don't like the fascists. But I really don't like you guys. You know,
I don't like the new progressives.
The new progressives. I don't care for you. And
he just feels like humanity is lost. He's just kind of falling down a deep dark hole. Yep.
I know, but it's like six of one, half dozen of another. Each one is equally bad. It's just from a different side, and they're both determined that theirs is the only way to be. And I like that in the end, he went ahead and gave the information to her, thinking, you know what, it's better to be free, even if you're making the wrong choices, than to be in the control that the fascists would have had.
I love that. I loved it so much, because that's what God has given us.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and all this stuff that we take, you know, he says, we Christians built a world in which the modern idea of freedom became possible, he told her. The only freedom I am opposed to is the kind that assaults the dignity of the human being. It's great. I decided to help you because even a sick freedom is better than the slavery of fascism. Even a world that is destroying itself in fantasy and pride is filled with people hungry for reality and ready to accept it humbly. And I love that. I love that so much, because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes when we talk about the history of the church and the difficult periods, there were always people, right? There were always the people that, even while the world was destroying itself in fantasy and pride, right? It's full of people that were hungry for reality. And
he's met those people.
Right.
He Ovka, if that's how you say her name.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, on the new progressive planets, mm-hmm. and Doug, and yeah, he knows people like that he met in those places. He wasn't able to meet them in the fascist world. Oh,
that's great. That just reminds me of, you know, if I find 100 good people, will you spare this city?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just kind of reminds me of that.
That's good.
Yeah. If I find Abram. One, how about one?
Yeah. How about 10?
Right.
Let's do 10.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And again, I know I keep saying this, but it really reminded me in many ways of that conversation from The American President, that movie with Michael Douglas and Michael J. Fox is his chief of staff, maybe. And he says, you know, the people want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert for a mirage. And when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand. And then the president says to him, people don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference. And I thought, that's what this book is showing us, except more important than politics in that sense is faith. And in this book, it's the faith. That's what they're all seeking, but they can't recognize what's true or not true because they've never even been exposed to it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's there.
Yeah, it is there. It's powerful stuff. But yeah, just well done, Cy Kellett. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much else to say about this, but it's just terrifically well done in a very small space. It's probably 200 pages. I don't have. It sounds like you have a hard copy. I didn't know that existed. That's cool.
Off Amazon.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah, I have the Kindle version. I need to get myself a hard copy.
I think I got the Kindle version first. Yeah, well, that was it, and I felt like. I get hard copies of stuff I like because I want to be able to lend it to people, especially if it's religious.
Right, me too.
And and this is one I was like, I would like to give it to Hannah to read or, you know, whoever. Yeah,
right.
And one of the things, there were two things I wanted to be sure that I mentioned about this book.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be at that point, I don't
know. Yeah, please go ahead, yes.
One was when the bishop is on the ship going to the new progressive planet. He meets Eddie, who works on the freight ship. And Eddie's like, oh, I feel like I'm really cooperating with something horrible here. And he is. So they wind up having a Bible study with a few other people. And the thing that comes up is somebody saying, yeah, but Jesus says, if your eye causes you to sin, you should take it out. And he goes, does he want us to be handicapped all the time? And I really actually had never heard this thing that Cy Kellett says. He says, Eddie explained himself, because Eddie had said, if we take this literally, we'll not cut our eye out. And the bishop was like, I don't think he knows what literally means here. And he's like, no. He says, the word we forget to take literally is if, Eddie said. Jesus says, if your eye causes you to sin. But speaking literally, your eye cannot cause you to sin, and neither can your hand or any other part of your body. Only your will can cause you to sin. If some part of your will wants to sin, you have to be firm with yourself and cut it out. And I was like, oh, genius. Eddie, Eddie, you're genius.
Way to go, Eddie. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was his visits to Peter and Paul's tomb, which you mentioned, you know, there's that quote at the very beginning about venerating the tombs of the blessed apostles. And then here it's otherwise required visits to the blessed apostles in the 2098 canon law.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, until you read that out loud, I actually really hadn't thought about how key his visit to Peter's tomb is. I mean, I did this time through the book. I really dwelt on that section because I really enjoyed his mental conversation with St. Peter.
Yes.
That changes everything about his orientation to his future. Because he's been offered the chance to go on a colony seeding ship and take the faith to another galaxy or solar system or whatever it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's really kind of thinking about it. This is kind of an attractive idea. But when he's at Peter's tomb, thoughts are going through his head, and it's like he's having this conversation with St. Peter, because everything he's pondering is something that Peter faced.
Hmm.
And when he comes out of it, he's like, oh, I know what I have to do.
Yes.
It's very much like the story about Peter was on his way out of Rome and the Quo Vadis story.
And
he met Jesus coming in and he goes, well, where are you going? And he says, well, if you're not going to stay, be with him, I got to be with him. And he's like, oh, okay, turn around. This is my place is here.
Yeah.
And that's what the bishop does. And of course, then at the end, when I read the, let's see, it has the, the epilogue about how he was, where he was martyred. And he stayed even as the planet fell to fascist forces. And he was personally executed by the Führer. And all these things. And what he says when he comes out, and he was with his close confidant, Abbot Edward Cho, who was Eddie. And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, and I have to say, I've read this book 3 times now. And each time I cry over Doug, and I cry at the epilogue because it's beautiful.
Yeah. It is beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I didn't realize, I didn't connect it. I don't know why I didn't, that was Eddie. But yeah, yeah, of course it is.
He was meant to be a monk. You could tell from the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. 273rd anniversary of his death.
Yeah.
Plaque. Wow. That's cool.
So it was that much later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he went back and stayed with his people. He didn't abandon them.
And the world went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if he's going to write any more. I'm sure he gets asked that all the time.
Maybe.
Are you going to do this again? Yeah.
It's a nice little
solar system he's set up here that could
I
be
know.
Rich.
I know. I like the world. It would be interesting to see some other things happening, though he may feel like he said everything he wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, because the last line is, this cathedral was consecrated on the 273rd anniversary of his death. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I love how we like to build stuff. You know, we build stuff on the sites of things. I think that's just something that we do.
It's a human thing. We're made to. Well, you know, the whole world is a testimony to who God is and different ways to see him and what's important to him. Why would we not do that too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's who we are. Here's what's important to us.
That's good.
And here's where it happened, right here with matter.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Well, cool. Well, is there anything else we'd like to say about it other than thank you, Cy Kellett, for this terrific book?
Write another book of some sort.
Really liked it. Yeah. Yeah, and he wrote a book that I like too. It's sort of a beginning book on Jesus that I think it's called Teacher of Strange Things. Is that the right title? A Teacher of Strange Things?
You're right.
But anyway, it's been good. I've passed my copy on already. But it's a very nice book too. Yeah. And I'm not sure if he's written anything else.
It's just nonfiction. I mean, nonfiction. It's
nonfiction. Fiction, it's sort of an introduction to Jesus.
Okay.
Is what I would say. And it's, you know, still involved with OCIA and, sometimes you run into the right person for the right book and that was it. And off it went. So,
I'm going to have to, try this book. And I think I've said that before, cause I remember the little thing of, oh, Jesus was just super nice. Never got angry and everything.
It's good. It's a good little book. So. Yeah. That was good too. So
okay,
yeah, and I don't believe he's written anything else, but I sure do enjoy him on the Catholic Answers show.
Oh, I do too.
Yep,
I do like him on Catholic Answers.
Cool,
he gets those people in there, and he's kind of clowning around a lot of the time or keeping things light, but he's so good at knowing about the faith, being an apologist.
Yeah.
I think so too. A lot of times when a guest is talking about something, but that made me think of this question. I'm like, yeah, because everyone does, and we need to think about it. So perfect. He's a really good host.
Yeah, very good.
Yep.
Good, good, good. All right. Okay, so next up for us in a couple of weeks is something light. You know, so you want to do something light.
Okay.
You know, so how about Oppenheimer?
Of course.
Of course.
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan, that's right. Let us
dance with the devil again.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty to talk about in that movie. So looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Well, good. You bet. Well, wonderful. Yeah. Well, thanks for reading this book yet again with me. So this was my second read, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was glad you picked it. It's
good.
Like I say, it was my excuse to buy the actual copy of it.
That's great. Yeah. For some reason, I can have it. I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to look again. I'll have to find a hard copy. So
definitely going to get one. Yeah, I think it's just a, print on demand kind of thing.
Okay. Sounds good.
So, yeah.
Very good. That's great. Thank you. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.